Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, so first and foremost, when it comes to Georgia fans, the thing they really want more than anything else is they want to win, right? They want to see Georgia win at a level that was higher than it has been the last couple of years. That makes them really no different than the average SEC fan or big-time college football fan. There's always an insatiable appetite for success. It makes things kind of restless at times to time, and fans can get kind of impatient, but winning is the name of the game. However, at Georgia, I do think from time to time, things will take a step beyond just that. And various programs have their own version of this, but there is kind of a specific way that certain teams kind of want to win, or certain fan bases want their favorite team to win. And I think if you could kind of draw up a script for a lot of Georgia fans of what a winning season would look like for Georgia, back in the college football playoff, hoisting another SEC championship, if you want to talk national championships, you could do that too. I think a lot of Georgia fans would say, I'd love to see it happen, and I'd love for a big year for a guy like Zamir White to be a big part of it. Because let's face it, Georgia has been running back university, or RBU, as you kind of hear that phrase from time to time. And in the changeover to a Todd Monken offense, where I think we welcome in, and hopefully Monken's presence ushers in an era in which Georgia throws the ball more. Monken has said in the past that he wants to be the kind of play caller that throws to win. I like the sound of that. I think that reflects what the modern game is all about, and as a fan of UGA, I kind of welcome those kinds of changes. However, I'm also the kind of person that just in my personal life can at times be a little resistant to change. And so while some change for Georgia is good, there's a certain sense of, well, let's not do too much change in here. Let's still make sure the things that have made Georgia fun and unique in the past, those things continue. And around that running back position, that's a big part of that. I think this is especially true when you've got a fan favorite like White. And for whatever reason, White's just kind of always had a lot of fans, a lot of folks believing in him. I think when you're the nation's number one running back coming out of the class of 2018, that makes that a little bit easier to do. He's also a little bit of a quieter, more soft-spoken guy, so you can sort of project whatever you want onto him because he's not going to really say a whole lot one way or another. But he's a guy that fans really want to see break out. You hear that big Zeus cheer every time he does anything on a football field. That's always kind of fun to think about. And when it comes to breaking out and having a big year in 2020, that is something that ESPN apparently thinks is really possible. Connor Riley wrote about this the other day at DogNation.com, and I want to kind of follow up with some of my own thoughts on this as well. Way too early top 25, breakout performer prediction for each of those teams. Georgia's breakout performer, as predicted by Alex Scarborough from ESPN, is Zamir White. Here is what Scarborough writes about the Georgia running back. He says DeAndre Swift is gone, so is Brian Harrion. Now it's White's turn. Against Baylor in the Sugar Bowl, with Swift injured, Harry not in attendance, White made his first career start, rushing for 92 yards on 18 carries. He missed 2018 because of an injury, you know that. And that was exactly what the fans were hoping for from the former blue chip recruit. In other words, to see Zamir White put a punctuation on his 2019 season the way that he did makes you hopeful that he will pick up where he left off for 2020 and allow himself, along with a pretty talented crop of Georgia running backs now. Let's not forget this. You know, James Cook is a part of that. Kenny McIntosh is a part of that. Kendall Milton on his way in as a freshman is a part of that. Who knows who else might be added before this class is all said and done. But for now, those are the names we know. These are talented guys, and they may all have their turn at bat to do something. But White, I believe, is the most significant of those names because I think he starts the year at the top of that depth chart, and we'll see how the competition works its way out from then. And I think the writer from ESPN right about this. By him finishing off the Sugar Bowl the way that he did, it's at least hopeful now to say that by the time the 2020 season rolls around, he's far removed from the injury situation that he dealt with in both 2017 and 2018, that he's kind of a fresher, newer player, all things being equal. And as I kind of alluded to a little earlier, if that ends up being true, how much fun is that going to be for Georgia fans? Because it just seems like that White's attitude has kind of always been exactly what you want it to be. We don't get to hear a ton from him, but he just seems to have his perspective exactly where it's supposed to be. I'll give you an example of this. After the SEC championship game, Mike Griffith had a chance to catch up with Zamir in that locker room. This is before kind of a better performance for him in the Sugar Bowl, but in terms of just being back on the field and working and competing and working to be the best that he could be, I think that White really laid out a great attitude about kind of how he's gotten back on a football field and kind of laying the groundwork for how he may go on to do even better things in 2020. Let me let you hear just a little bit of Zamir.
I just worked and, like, just did what I did to get back because all I know is, like, hard work and, like, just grinding, man. So, yes, sir, so that's what I do.
How much did it help the fans and the support you got from the Georgia fans? Was that a big part of pushing?
Georgia fans are great fans, man. They're huge, man, and they supported me through it all, the downfall and all that. So, like, I love Georgia fans, man. They're the best.
I mean, could you write a better quote than that? All I know is hard work and grinding. Obviously, giving a nice little shout-out there to Georgia fans. That is one of the reasons why. That little short clip, soft-spoken guy, not the most animated dude in the world. But words like that are one of the reasons why Zamir just continues to be a huge fan favorite. And Georgia fans like the idea of being RBU. But I think it's fair to ask, how does that RBU reputation change in the changeover to Todd Monken as offensive coordinator? And how do projections for guys like Zamir White? Because it used to be that you could just kind of pencil in the lead Georgia running back for X number of rushing yards and whatever else, because Georgia had built up, even predating Kirby Smart, by the way, had just built up a pretty good track record of being able to do those things. But it's at least, I think, fair to ask, does that prediction, does that projection change a bit when it comes to now what is a Todd Monken offense? And if you look at the recent track record for Monken when he's either been head coach or play caller on his own for like how running backs have flourished with him, I do think you see a little bit of a mixed bag of results. Some of it's been really good. For instance, Joseph Randall going back to Oklahoma State back in 2011 and 2012. Randall had a 1,200-yard season, a 1,400-yard season. So in that kind of version of the Todd Monken offense, a running back like Randall really, really thrived. At Southern Miss, though, as a head coach from 13 to 15, 2013 through 2015, the results are a little more uneven. The Golden Eagles were not very good running the football at all in his first year there, 2013. Maybe it's because he didn't inherit very much, but it's at least worth pointing that out. They rushed for like 800 yards for the entire team for the entire year. 2014, a little bit better, but still the leading rusher, fewer than 600 yards in the season. And then by 2015, Ito Smith, who Falcons fans may know a little bit about, by that point in time, he kind of broke out and had a big year. And by that point in time, actually, Southern Mississippi had turned into a pretty good running team by 2015, but the first couple years, maybe not quite so much. By the way, 1,128 yards for Ito Smith back in 2015. Same thing for the Bucs in 2018 as a play caller. Lead the National Football League in passing yards, but according to TeamRankings.com, just 28th in overall rushing yards. So kind of a mixed bag here for Monken, who is a guy brought in because of his acumen throwing the ball. You know, what does that mean for the running backs and what we think may be an offense that features the pass just a little bit more? Let me also take you back in time to Monken's time with the Cleveland Browns this year. Now, let me set the scenario up for this because I do think this is an important next step in kind of understanding how all of this is going to play out. So if we go back to like early October, the Browns, who Monken was working for, not the play caller for, that was Freddie Kitchens, the head coach, but he was in place there as the offensive coordinator. The Browns had just gotten walloped by the San Francisco 49ers, who obviously will be in the Super Bowl next Sunday. 31-3 was the final score, and obviously anytime you get beat that bad, there's a lot that goes wrong. And for San Francisco, a lot of that was, I should say for Cleveland, a lot of that was offensively. And the subject came up of, hey, the ratio of running plays versus passing plays, like kind of what do you want to be, and you know what should Browns fans expect from you on that? This is him talking about the Browns after a loss, a bad NFL team. Frankly, we think of Georgia as still a good college football team, so this is not a perfect comparison one way or another, but in listening to Monken talk about his rushing philosophy here, I do think we can take something from that in terms of what he's going to try to instill at a place like UGA. So let me let you hear Todd Monken going back to his time at Cleveland.
We are trying to win the game. We are trying to run the football. And sometimes statistics can show a different side of that when you're losing. I mean, I don't think at one point the other night when it was still a ball game, if you looked at where probably at that point our run-pass ratio wouldn't have been so skewed. I know we were running the football because I sit up there and I'm charting it. So I know at a certain point it turns. It just does. It all of a sudden you go from a balance to imbalance because the only chance you have, you're not going to have enough possessions. You're just not. The clock's going to run on you. But I would hope that we understand the formula for us to win is to run the football, play action, get the ball out of his hands quickly, be able to move the chains. Still, we want to be explosive. We have good players. And obviously, when games get away from you, it becomes where there is an imbalance there. And I really don't think that's what we're trying to do, is to develop an offense or to do anything other than do what we think is the best interest of the Browns, and the best interest of the Browns to move the football and win collectively as a team and play complementary football. And I think we're trying to run the football first, play complementary football, not turn it over, all the things that give you the best chance to win.
Interesting that he says there, we're trying to run the football first. That's a little bit different than some of the clips I've played for you in the past when it comes to Todd Monken. But I think what you see is, if he were here to kind of explain his past, he would say, hey, the opponents we were playing, the talent I had, kind of dictated what you saw. As I said before, in the early stage of his time at Southern Miss, maybe not very good running backs on the roster. That's why there were no rushing yards. At a place like Oklahoma State, more kind of prolific all the way around, you see Randall having some real success there. At a place like Cleveland, yes, we've got Nick Chubb. We're going to get him involved, but sometimes the Browns were just getting their brains beat in, and there's not as much of an opportunity to be able to see that. In the same press conference, I'm not going to play this clip for you, but he was kind of asked about getting Odell Beckham Jr. involved, and in talking about Beckham, said, hey, listen, we've also got Nick Chubb as well. We're going to want to run the football with him too. So I think one of the things that you see when you really listen to a lot of things that Monken has said in the past, there is not necessarily a bias in favor of the pass as much as there is a desire just to be as explosive as possible. And in the modern game, sometimes that means leaning on throwing the football some. So the overall bottom line is, I'm not quite sure I can predict exactly what the Georgia offense is going to look like this season. I even said that some yesterday. However, I think the best case scenario, one in which the passing game improves without the running game disappearing, that best case scenario may indeed be the most likely scenario, because of all the years in which Monken's been a coach, he's never had more talent than he'll enjoy in 2020 in comparison to the teams he's going to be playing against. And in this perfect situation for him, or at least what could be a perfect situation, we may see a version of a Monken offense emerge that hasn't existed in any of his previous stops. That's at least what I think UGA fans should hope should be true, myself included. The passing game getting better, but still giving Zamir White a chance to flourish, and the other Georgia running backs there as well. This has been RBU in the past, and a version of running back university in the future could actually make things easier for the passing game to thrive. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by our friends at Kroger. Good to have you with us live on video, 10 a.m. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you with us. Went a little long there on the Monken running back talk, but we'll get Jeff Sintel here coming up in a moment. I also want to remind you that we're, as I said before, brought to you by our friends at Kroger today. It is cold right now, and with it being so cold, great chance for you to kind of stay indoors with your family, enjoy a family night inside. Whether it be with some of those classic board games like Jenga and Saar, you can get those at 25% off at a Kroger close to you right now. 25% off classic children's books. And when you buy select movies like The Lorax or Maleficent, you can also get a free bag of Twizzlers or a 3-count pack of Pop Secret to enjoy while you watch those movies. Stay inside, cuddle up, enjoy a night indoors, courtesy of our friends at Kroger. All right, so it is a big weekend coming up for Georgia recruiting. Before I bring in Jeff Sintel, let me go around the doghouse just by kind of laying the foundation for what all this is going to look like. Jeff at the forum, at forum.dognation.com, has put together a pretty long list of some of the folks who are going to be in attendance this weekend. For those of you in video, I'll show this to you. Radio podcast, I'll read this. So this is a lot of what we'll be talking to Jeff Sintel about coming up in just a moment. Coming into town this weekend, expected visitors, Broderick Jones and his official visit, Cedric Von Prawn Granger, these two offensive line commits for UGA, who are also taking visits elsewhere. Georgia going to try to lock those guys down. Jeff says that's already been done. That's in the bag. I think for a lot of us, we'll feel good when those letters of intents are signed. And another chance to kind of entertain those guys this weekend. Jones and Van Prawn, both pretty big visitors. Dejon Edwards, the running back out of Colquitt County, I think is a very interesting presence on campus this weekend, especially given what continues to be talked about When it comes to five-star running back Zach Evans, the fact that Georgia is talking to another running back this weekend, what does that mean? We'll address that with Jeff Sintel here in just a moment. You've also got a couple of UGA signees, Tate Ratledge and Austin Blasky, both offensive linemen. They're taking their official visits. I think Ratledge has said he just kind of wants to be there to help entertain guys like Jones and Cedric Von Prawn, which is a pretty good thing for a guy in Ratledge who has been a little bit of a Pied Piper for this class as it is. So good job by Tate there on that front. And then you've got a guy like DJ Lundy and Cameron Kenny, some of these later names to the process, guys who around the state of Georgia have just had tremendous senior seasons, and that senior performance may have gone a long way towards earning them an opportunity to maybe be a part of this class. I told Jeff this on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger on Wednesday. I see nothing wrong with really honoring guys who play well in their final year on campus. This is something that Kirby Smart has said he wants to do, and guys like Lundy or Kenny, or, you know, we've talked a bit about Ladd McConkey, you know, those guys may get a chance to really, really enjoy that. So it's an interesting recruiting weekend for Georgia with names we've been talking about for a long time, with names that have really just kind of popped on the scene here as of late, and also those big looming questions about guys like Zach Evans and will they make their way, or will he make his way back on campus before it's all said and done. So it's a fun time to be following UGA recruiting. A few more days to go before the 2020 cycle comes to a close. We'll get ready to find out more about that. I'll also tell you that later on we'll preview a big weekend for UGA athletics. There are some really interesting developments around the rest of the SEC that we'll cover, including a couple quarterbacks potentially on the move here. So we'll do a lot of that coming up. It's Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. Really glad to have you with us today and hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I'll say hello to Jeff Sintel here. And, you know, Jeff, before you joined us, we were kind of going over the list that you put together at the forum at forum.dognation.com about who all is going to be on campus this weekend. So we'll start broad. We'll kind of work our way into some individual names over the course of our conversation. Just kind of give me a general overview about the offensive lineman coming in. Big, I'm assuming a big visit here for Jones and Cedric Von Prawn Granger, and just kind of where you think all of this stands as Georgia gets ready to host a bunch of guys before the 2020 cycle comes to a close here at the beginning of February.
Hey, Brandon. Good morning, everybody. Sorry for the hiccup there. I was on a three-way conference call with Jordan Burge and Zachary Evans. How did that sound?
Well done, Jeff. Well done.
I guess the only thing that could add more intrigue to this weekend would be if those two names showed up in Athens. One could take an official visit, and one could also take an unofficial visit. But the crux of the matter here is it's kind of a huge offensive line, Matt Luke, put your weight belt on and go to work recruiting weekend. And it's really an odd sort of event where you have at least two, probably will wind up being three, Georgia Bulldogs that never took their official visit prior to signing. So you have Austin Blasky from South Effingham, the wrestler, who was rated number one in the state in Class 5A earlier this year. You've got Tate Ratledge. I mean, gosh, Tate Ratledge has been to Athens probably more times than you have, Brandon. And it's kind of funny how, you know, yeah, he's still there and he's taking his official visit. That's after last weekend, him and his buddy won the 2-on-2 NBA 2K video game tournament amongst the junior day guys. Tate was there last week helping talk to the 2021 junior class. And then the names that have been on everyone's mind. And for me, which what I would consider the closing kick and everything else is gravy for the 2020 cycle, and that's Cedric Von Prawn Granger. I could speechify for a long time about Cedric Von Prawn. I'm just going to say he's one of the most mature players I've ever been around. Winning and losing and playing for his brother certainly means a great deal to him. And I think when he does choose Georgia and sign with Georgia, I think he'll be a team captain type, much in the same way that I was touting Aziz Ojulari as that type of player in advance before he even got to Athens at the same time, a year and a half ago or whatever. So, and then there's the name Broderick Jones. Broderick Jones is visiting. I think he's just getting back from Illinois. He's taking a visit to Arkansas. The Georgia official's coming up. He's got an Auburn official planned everybody likes to worry about this guy. And, you know, for me, I'm just not in the business of drumming up drama, where I just don't see the drama other than he's a highly rated guy. You know, our good buddy Connor Riley tested this morning in his Dog Nation video stand-up that he could be seen very well as the most important remaining recruit in the class at the very least, but I think he could be argued as the most important recruit of the class total, given that he might be able to slide in and earn a starting spot now that Cade Mays and Isaiah Wilson and Andrew Thomas have made their decision. So it's a very big offensive line, Matt Luke, show us what you got type weekend to start with at Georgia.
We should also point out we're in kind of that re-rank season for the major national sites, and Broderick Jones just got a huge, huge bump from Rivals in their final re-rank. So if you want a kind of a numeric value of how important Jones is, obviously seeing him in, what, top five status according to that website, that's a pretty nice company for Jones to be in.
Yeah, the thing with Jones, and I say this often because it's the quickest descriptor I can come up with, if every time you see him, you'll hear or you'll say he's X amount of pounds, and then you look at him on the hoof and you're just like, man, you look 20, 25 pounds lighter. You saw him at the All-American week, the All-American week for Under Armour in Orlando, and man, he doesn't have the best technique yet. He wasn't dropping, his hands were dropping too low. He wasn't kicking out and kind of coming, squaring his shoulders and coming parallel to the line of scrimmage. He wasn't doing any of that. But his natural balance and athleticism was good enough to just mirror those guys and just keep them away from the pylon and the one-on-one drills that everybody focuses on. But, you know, those things are always weighted so much towards the defensive linemen because they have no threat of worrying about the run game. But I'll never forget, I was watching Broderick, you know, kind of gallop up and down the field. And, man, they were doing these drills in warm-up. Kind of think about maybe everyone's old-school karaoke on steroids a little bit. And some of these safeties and linebackers were just like, to heck with this, after like two or three steps or like 5 or 10 yards of a pace up and down the warm-up line. And there's Broderick Jones just getting after it, looking like he's a skill guy, a tight end, hopping on one leg, going back and forth. I mean, really, if you put side by side of him and Darnell Washington working alongside a lot of those drills, you would sit there and you'd probably come out of that thinking that Broderick Jones is just a little better athlete than the nation's number one athlete for this 2020 cycle than Darnell Washington.
So let me ask you a very elementary question here for a moment. And as I've even acknowledged myself before, that last official visits aren't necessarily the trump card that people sometimes think they are. They haven't always worked out for Georgia, and Georgia's been able to absorb plenty of other last official visits being taken by guys who ended up, you know, signing with UGA, although they visited elsewhere before the deadline closed down. But, you know, Jones, if I've got my timeline correct, has still got a final official coming to Auburn, and I believe that Van Praan's still going to Florida for an official visit, if I've once again kind of followed the online chatter correctly on this. So very elementary question: why don't those visits matter? You seem to be really, really confident that Van Praan and Jones are going to land at UGA. I've got no reason to dispute you. I guess I probably agree with that as well. But just for the most basic possible question, why is the Van Praan visit to Florida not a threat? Why is the Jones visit to Auburn not a threat? Or really any of the other visits we've seen Jones taken as of late?
Yeah, so I know everybody would like for me to write a blank check with my mouth right now and just say, or not write a check, but give some sort of authenticity that these are just young men taking visits, because the reality here is that anything could happen in college football recruiting. But with the Cedric Von Prong Granger issue, it's already been well vetted. Georgia was the fit for him on a lot of levels, beyond the fact that the playing time, the relationship to Coach Sam Pittman, the relationship with the members of the current Georgia 2020 class. One of the most mature things any recruit has touted to me in a long time is that Cedric Von Prong compared the economic engines of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to the Tuscaloosa, Alabama, to Atlanta, Georgia, and the Athens community. And I don't think Gainesville, Florida fits into a kind of a hierarchy where the economy, the networking, the opportunities there for Cedric Von Prong Granger are going to be any better than the Atlanta area, especially when he has family in the Atlanta area, especially when he has immediate family moving to the Atlanta area as well. It just seems that that's a very mature, very, very vetted decision. And I don't think those things are changing. So I think it's a time when everybody's going to shoot their shot. Everybody's going to make their best pitch. But, this Cedric Monfrons Granger fellow, guys, he is a different type of dude. And he just looks at this recruiting stuff from a totally different way. The things here with Broderick Jones is now Georgia has a clear starting opportunity to go along with he's getting to know Coach Matt Luke, and the location factor is so huge for Broderick Jones. It's always been. Athens is only about 70 miles up the road from Lithonia. I don't think Dan Mullen and all his wizardry, I don't think he can change that. I don't think Gus Malzahn can change the simple geography here that Georgia just checks the box on so many levels. And Matt Luke is now a guy that's coming into his world as a guy he'd like to be coached by. But you also have to remember, we wrote about this recently. Relationships matter with Broderick Jones. I'm not just talking about the offensive line coach. There's Kirby Smart. There's Jonas Jennings. There's Del McGee. There are guys like that that are big influences on his recruitment that he feels very comfortable with and has felt very comfortable with. And then you add in the fact that Broderick Jones wants to play for championships and be a part of something big. And he can't go find a Darnell Washington or a Keely Ringo or a Cedric Monfrons Granger, an Arian Smith, a Marcus Roseme, a Tate Ratledge. He can't find all those pieces at those other schools quite like he can with Georgia. So it's not just one thing. It's kind of just the combination of everything that Georgia should feel as secure as anyone likely should right now when it comes to two commitments. I mean, Cedric Monfrons basically said matter-of-factly to me, and we need to come back to that final reason about Cedric Monfrons, was he said that had his team, his Warren East continue, and folks, this young man bleeds for Warren East, and he probably is just cares about his high school and his high school brothers as much as any recruit I've ever been around. Cedric Monfrons wouldn't take official visits during the fall because it would detract from the chance to win a championship there at Warren Easton. That's a lot of things to think about there when you look at, Cedric Monfrons Granger and Broderick Jones. It just seems that Georgia has done enough to stay in a very good spot with both of those guys.
You know, when you look at some of the other guys who are going to be here, they kind of represent what, at least to my eyes, appear to be late interest by George, whether it be like a DJ Lundy or Cameron Kenny, to a certain extent, maybe even a Dejon Edwards a little bit. And I think for a lot of fans, it's a little bit difficult to process this huge flurry of what appears to be late offers, or at the very least, late interest. We had a lot of names show up on Before the Hedges this past week, for instance, that were not names we had talked about before. Late interest on George's part with what also seems to be only a small number of scholarships available, at least based on the kind of numbers we've kind of kicked around there in the past. How do you process what looks to be kind of a tight number situation for Georgia with what has suddenly kind of turned into a relatively long list of late interest for guys that we've had to acquaint ourselves with pretty fast?
Yeah, there's a lot of interchange stuff going on right now. And part of that is, as we spoke about on Hedges, man, it's just the senior year evaluation. Georgia looks at the senior film and maybe there are new fits into this program, and they combine it with some expected program attrition, which has happened and which can still happen. And they also combined it with perhaps new fits for the system they're running on offense. I think, there's a guy named Charles Bell, the sixth of all things. This is just the recruiting cycle for me and everyone out there, Brandon, where we have someone that's the sixth in their family of a family name. Not the fourth, not the third, not the fifth, but the sixth. That's a safety back from Boston, Massachusetts. That's Charles Bell, sixth. He's going to take an official visit this weekend out of Boston, Massachusetts. He was, Johnson. That's the next weekend. But Charles Bell is out of Maryland, and he's a guy that had recently decommitted from Syracuse. And that's probably a causal and effect thing when you look at Enos Rakestraw, who now is given his last official visit, which was going to Georgia, to Texas, and that means Georgia's kind of got to get back in that lane for maybe that extra DB they want to add. I think a couple offers stand out here as very interesting. One of those is the name Cameron Kenny out of Collins Hill in Gwinnett County. Now, Cameron rates on the 24/7 Sports Composite as a three-star defensive lineman. But when you start looking around that story, Georgia has offered him to play center. And his other official visits are, and other options there are Air Force and Army. So that's another senior year evaluation. This may be another Matt Luke evaluation about the type of guys he wants to get in his program. But Cameron Kenny is also taking an official visit there. And you see those two military schools there and the service academy. They like to see their prospects have great grades. And I think if Georgia even gets maybe tight with a lot of folks want to say yes on the numbers front here for the 2020 class, that might be a guy who could come into the class as either as a preferred walk-on type guy in the very end, because Hope Scholarship is obviously a benefit there to an in-state prospect. There's just a lot of things, and I know most schools would feel nervous with, or most daily podcasters would feel a little angst or anxiety about what's happening with all these names that show up in the 11th hour. But the other thing you got to remember is just rest satisfied that this class is almost fully complete, and now it seems like Georgia is trying to hone in on or dial in a name here, a name there, that they really feel would benefit the roster pieces that they don't have going forward.
I want to finish with a question about five-star running back Zach Evans, because obviously that storyline won't go away at all. Let me squeeze in one more thing on visitors before we get there. 2020 class, you're about to put the ribbon on that, but work continuing for the 2021 class as well. And I always butcher this young man's name, but Ajayi Hall, the five-star receiver, looks like he's expected to be back on campus again this weekend. So a little bit of time to entertain a pretty important 2021 name while the finishing pieces get put on the 2020 class.
Yeah, so you know, it's an intersection of things here because, you know, Brandon, you're going to love the fact that I can say five-star in front of the Ajayi Hall's name as well, and the nation's number one wide receiver at this time now for the 2021 class. He's now moving from Armwood, Florida to ING Academy for his senior year, so he's really the best receiver in the country. Then he will show that playing for ING and going against those DBs at ING in practice every day. I don't anticipate, especially with this late interest with Ladd McConkey, I don't anticipate Georgia going too deep in the paint for a lot of receivers in 2021, especially not more than maybe two or so. But I'm sure most would feel empowered to look for Georgia looking at the very top of the list at the wide receiver position. You think of Ajayi Hall as a guy that would definitely be on Georgia's mind, as Isaiah Brevard in Mississippi. And there's also another homegrown Bulldog, Jaden Thomas, that's from Pace Academy. It's also a strong consideration for Georgia in the 2021 class as well. Right now, Brandon, is an interesting time because there's so much late juice here with 2020 when you add in Mr. Evans and you add in Mr. Birch and the uncertainty about two unsigned All-American prospects tossing in there with, you know, Sam Pittman out, Matt Luke in. And then you have the 2021 narratives popping up with the Barrett Carters, the Emeritus Smiths, the Brock Vandengrifts, the Will Shipleys, the Labassie Carrolls, the, you know, the Cody Browns, on and on and on. And then you've got every day, this is this season where Georgia, who feels so good about its 2020 cycle, that it's really, you know, kind of grinding and working hard on the 2022 prospects and the 2023 prospects. You see the son of former Georgia defensive end Philip Benton getting an offer, which was a very big offer, out of Newton High School in Covington, getting what he called a dream offer. And then you see a young man out in Texas, Brandon, that I'm already going to tell you, I've been watching him for about a week and a half now, 2 weeks now, because I've heard about the waves he's making. And I'm sure this is the part where Brandon kind of tunes me out and it goes Charlie Brown, wah, 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 wah voice when I start talking about it 2023. But that young man has got some woe to his game, and I mean some, you know, Zamir White early woe to his game as well on his high school film. And it's just stuff here, man, where it seems like right now it's an intersection or an interchange of everything going on with Georgia recruiting where there's a lot to look at and there's a lot to filter through.
So let me finish a little talk on five-star running back Zachary Evans. I said this on yesterday's show. I'm entertained by all this. Ultimately, that's what all of this is kind of supposed to be. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be entertainment. Evans, I think, has been entertaining. The twists, the turns, Georgia out, maybe now Georgia back in. At least it certainly seems that way, or the possibility at least exists that Georgia's back in. The fact that really no one can say with certainty may only makes it more fun for me. I've told you before, I think both on and off the air, I'm not quite sure what could happen in February that would make me feel like this was over with one way or another. You know, I guess, Jeff, I'll just let you take this wherever you want to go with it. What do you think about where things currently stand with Evans?
Man. I mean, you know, Brandon, I'll just simply say I think the matter is still very unclear, and there's not going to be any clarity with the national signing day on February the 5th. There's not going to be any clarity no matter how many Instagram pictures he puts out. There's not going to be any real clarity with how many financial aid forms he can sign with all these other schools. Simply going to be, this young man's going to show up somewhere, probably in all likelihood going to be in the May semester, the late May cycle, and everybody's going to know where he's at because he's enrolled there, and that will start his NCAA window when he has five years to play four seasons. Man, he's so talented, and I guess I always strive to find positivity when I discuss Zachary Evans, and I really try to do that. So if this young man, wherever he winds up, if he becomes a part of that program and he is bought in, I'm going to say this, he's going to be worth all the trouble, or worth all the angst or the back and forth, or, you know, kind of like those Godfather moments for folks who follow our recruiting. You know, just when I think I was out of this Zach Evans stuff, then it pulls me back in. I've got people that follow our coverage by the word and the letter of what we write and what we put out there. And they kind of come at me with, like, you know, and I understand it, that it's probably Zach Evans fatigue, but this is going to be the one five-star Georgia, if they do land in the fold, it's going to just create so many diverse opinions about it. I remember when Zach Evans told me at the Under Armour week, he said, you know, I don't really care what the fans think. I don't really care what they think about what I'm doing or what I'm going through here. He's like, all I know is that when I get there, they're going to love me because I'm going to make plays. And he's probably pretty right about that. I don't think anybody would think for one second about Zach Evans and maybe the ups and downs of this recruitment. Should he show up and even flash, Brandon, 90% of the talent that he clearly has? And I think that's what all the fuss is about a little bit. You know, everybody wonders, you know, Zach Evans, what does this mean for Dejon Edwards, who's a heck of a football player in his own right? And then you think of DJ Lundy, kind of like what we put in the forum this week, how, yeah, he's going for his third wrestling state championship. He's been a state champion now at Irwin County, and he's a guy that Georgia's recruiting as an inside linebacker. But make no mistake, if numbers ever get shy and shallow on the running back side of the ball, and, you know, those folks who hike up their britches and say, well, Georgia has to have, this is Georgia, they have to have five, six scholarship running backs on the team. Well, DJ Lundy's a guy that can cross over and cross train and be a pretty good SEC running back in his own right, especially when that's not his primary position.
So you said a moment ago, what does this mean for Dejon Edwards? And you asked it as if it was a rhetorical question. Let me ask it as a non-rhetorical question. What does all this mean for Dejon Edwards, a good back in his own right out of Colquitt County who's expected to be on campus this weekend?
Yeah, I think that decision really comes down to Georgia and Florida State. There's just been some off and on with Georgia so much that it seems like Florida State can come in there and, man, they could legitimately paint Dejon Edwards as a dude and as a guy, and one of the centerpiece remaining finishes to the class. And I don't think Georgia can say that. For me, I think it would take a lot of maturity for a guy like Dejon Edwards to just sit there and go, don't care about all that. Don't care about, you know, where I was on the board or where I was prioritized or where I was not prioritized. I mean, you know, Dejon Edwards was actually basically the back in the state of Georgia that it seems like Del McGee pursued as hotly and as heavily as any running back in the state of Georgia over the cycle. So that's something there. It all comes down to, you know, Dejon Edwards is going to sign somewhere on February 5th. That's a gift. No one knows, you know, Zachary Evans is not going to do that. And Georgia has to start looking again, and I guess these are still great problems to have. And, you know, you want to run that race and think we're good at running back. We're just going to call whatever happens with Zach Evans in the class as a best player available or kind of like a late addition to the class and go from there. And then Georgia has to start balancing whether Dejon Edwards is more valuable than a slot receiver like McConkey or, you know, these other late pieces like that, potentially an Alex Huntley, potentially a DJ Lundy going forward with that. It always never fails to entertain, but also it's one of those things where I don't think with Kirby's signing days, especially how it seems like the early period has sucked out all the drama, this recruiting staff and this coaching staff has never failed to give you at least one or two chortles on national signing day the last few years, no matter what happened.
So I realize no one knows the answer to this, but is there a chance, because you call Evans a best player available type, and I think that's probably an apt description for him wherever he ends up landing, this is the kind of guy you bring him in because of the talent. Given that as a potential scenario, is there a world in which Georgia takes Dejon Edwards and also still takes Zach Evans?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, watch it unroll and happen, but I don't think so because, it just seems to me with what Georgia's trying to do, you know, the blue shirt stuff there with Jared Zirkle. And, you know, part of me, you know, nobody even thinks about guys like Kendall Milton anymore who's just – been everything folks would ever want to recruit, an elite running back recruit to be for Georgia. You know, all this late focus is on the new guy and the next guy. You know, certainly that is understandable. But Georgia's trying, you know, people forget, if Georgia doesn't load up, and here's a point I don't know if you've even brought up on your program, Brandon. What Georgia's trying to do with scholarships, if there was ever a way where they could find a way to not keep forward counting these grad transfers, and you know, Trey McKitty's a great example. He can't count towards the 2020 cycle because he's not enrolled. Jamie Newman can count towards the 2020 cycle. But sooner or later, it feels like you're robbing Peter to pay Paul to go through something I heard my grandmother say all the time and my mom say all the time coming up. The 2021 class is going to be a great class, a lot more in-state guys, a lot more in-state guys that are going to be drama-free, so to speak. And if Georgia goes into that class kind of saying, okay, we're already charging Zirkle against the 2021 number. You're charging McKitty against the 2021 number. It just keeps adding to the fact that, you know, Georgia can't sign a full allotment of players. And sure, that's fine. But what it does is it robs Georgia the ability to take a young man in that slot and get at least 3 years of strength training, coaching absorption, and project and progression to be a really terrific football player by the junior year. That's just something I don't know if a lot of people think about.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff, Jeff. We know it's going to be busy for you covering all this weekend. We'll look forward to reading you at the forum at forum.dognation.com and on dognation.com as well. Thanks for being here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We look forward to getting a chance to speak to you soon.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, good stuff there from Jeff Sintel. A lot to kind of think about. You know, interesting at the end that he kind of talks about the number situation and how when you take these graduate transfers, you're kind of always spinning it forward in terms of counting against the future class. For me personally, I'm sort of fine with that. I mean, I think the way that a college team gets itself in trouble more often than not is by playing it too safe with its scholarship count. Oh, we better hold one or two back, or we better not be too aggressive at talent acquisition because how are we going to fit all these guys under the 85 cap? That's how you get yourself in trouble. You know, I think the opposite of that is you put yourself in the best position to win by constantly trying to maximize the moment that you're in now. To me, it's a little bit like the NFL and the salary cap. Now, I'm not as big an NFL fan as I am a college football fan, but the one thing that I think you see is for all the panic about salary cap woes and needing to get under the salary cap, like look at the New Orleans Saints as a for instance on this. These things just have sort of a way of taking care of themselves. Scholarship limitations, the crunch of getting under the 85. Those things have a way of kind of taking care of themselves, too. So I actually really like it that Kirby remains aggressive there in that regard. And, you know, I never quite know how many guys George is going to be able to sign. Or, you know, a lot of this kind of stuff sort of eludes me because I'm not that smart anyway. But it is fun to pay attention to. What else is fun? A cruise around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And you're talking about fun stuff. Royal Caribbean is rolling out an amazing, amazing ship that you have got to be able to see. It's really the newest game changer in the cruise industry. And it is on its way. The first quantum ultra-class ship to sail in the U.S. and Europe. It's the Odyssey of the Seas. Odyssey is going to be sailing from Fort Lauderdale in the fall of 2020 and then from Rome in the summer of 2021. This is a really kind of amazing. So it's unbelievable you know, features on board, whether it be the Ripcord by iFly, which is kind of like a skydiving simulator, North Star, which is a jewel-shaped capsule, ascended 300 feet above, got these panoramic 360-degree views. Seaplex, which is like a really fun game area with basketballs, bumper cars. Can you believe they've got that at sea now? So a lot of cutting-edge entertainment, nightlife, the kind of stuff you've come to expect. And, of course, we here at Dog Nation Daily love the Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade. And that's going to be on there as well. So contact your own travel advisor to book your cruise, or let me recommend my friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority. You can call them 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. That'll get you in touch with the Cruise and Vacation Authority, and please let them know you heard about them here on Dog Nation Daily. All right, one kind of slightly late-breaking story. This is not a big deal, but it looks like Ed Orgeron has signed an extension at LSU. 6 years, $42 million for him. No real surprise there. A couple more interesting, I think, pieces of news. So there's been a lot of chatter as of where Chase Bryce, the Clemson quarterback, might transfer. It was speculated that he might transfer, then he made official that he was. There's been a lot of smoke, connecting him to Georgia, but a lot of weird social media stuff where kind of Georgia kind of pops up, and obviously Georgia was taking a transfer quarterback at some point in time, so there's been kind of a lot of curiosity about what might be going on for Bryce. I wanted to offer this as an update. Greg Arias, who covers Vanderbilt, I believe for Sports Illustrated, I think, covers Vanderbilt, has said that there is a he's spoken to Bryce, and Bryce has been in contact with Vanderbilt. So if you're wondering where Bryce may be going, at least one of those confirmed suitors is now Vanderbilt. So keep your eye on that for Bryce, the former Grayson quarterback, maybe in the mix for the Commodores, at least according to a report coming out of Nashville. Speaking of transfer quarterbacks, I think this is interesting. So 24/7 Sports, which does like the crystal ball feature for where high school recruits are going to go, also does crystal balls for its transfers now because it's got a little transfer portal section there. And the crystal ball leader to land KJ Costello is currently Mississippi State. There's even some reports coming out of Starkville that this could actually happen, maybe sooner rather than later. So this is, I think, really interesting because I think that Costello is a pretty impressive quarterback. When he's been healthy there in Palo Alto, he's had some really big games. Obviously, we know. Now, y'all know I'm critical of Mike Leach as a coach, and I'm not going to change my tune on that. But the one thing that he can do is he gets the most out of his quarterbacks. He obviously did that with Gardner Minshew there at Wazoo a couple of years ago. So Costello and Leach as a tandem together would at least be entertaining. And for these, you know, folks who kind of want to see the full, you know, kind of full-fledged version of the Mike Leach air raid type thing, a quarterback kind of like Costello certainly gives you a chance to do that. So we'll follow the future there. One of the other kind of big high-profile names on that transfer portal market is Costello, and there's at least a couple of ideas out there linking him to Mississippi State at the moment. And then finally, there's this. So Kevin Steele, according to a number of reports, is set to be the highest-paid defensive coordinator or assistant coach in all of college football. About to get a raise, it's going to pay him $2.5 million a year, kind of putting him in that same category where Dave Aranda was at LSU a year ago before Aranda became head coach at Baylor. But Steele's going to get this big raise. Now, listen, I like banging on Auburn as much as the next guy does. I like, you know, criticizing them, and it's kind of funny to see Steele in this position now, given the fact that it wasn't that long ago that he was not really a defensive coordinator in very high demand. Think about like the tail end of his time at Clemson when they were getting, you know, lit up by West Virginian bowl games. At one point in time, Steele was not the coveted name that apparently is now, to the point where Auburn's paying as much money as they can. This is one of those things I'm not going to be critical of for two reasons. First of all, I always think it's really smart for college football teams to exploit the areas in which there's no rule to limit you. You know, there are rules to limit the number of players you can have on campus at any one point in time. You can't have more than 85 guys on scholarship. That's a limitation. What's not a limitation, though, is how much you spend on your coaches to keep them employed and to keep them happy. There's no salary cap when it comes to your coaching you know, pool or anything like that, so you might as well pay as much as you need to. For all the things these college programs do with money, paying assistant coaches to keep them happy in the fold is actually, I think, one of the wisest things a program can do. And once again, for the Georgia fan who kind of wonders what the landscape is of his chief rivals and like the programs that are going to be the biggest thorn in Georgia's side moving forward, For as much as the national media wants to tell you about Florida and what Dan Mullen's going to do and this and that and blah, 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 and even to a certain extent Tennessee, who kind of finished the season on a high note, won its bowl game, and you know Jeremy Pruitt kind of swoops in and convinces Cade Mays to leave UGA or whatever else. What's happening at Auburn, I think, is at least worth watching. Now, listen, Gus Malzahn has seems to always kind of find a way to stub his toe, and, you know, they're sort of bad when you think they're going to be good and good when you think you're going to be bad. I sort of get all of that. But if Kevin Steele really is a defensive coordinator they're truly going to trust, and let's find out how good of a DC he is with Derek Brown no longer in the fold there. But if that's a defensive coordinator they really want to believe in and kind of make a long-term answer at $2.5 million a year, he's not going to have very many reasons to leave and go looking anywhere else. And for a guy like Chad Morris, a good friend of Gus Malzahn's, who's been a head coach but kind of a competent tutor of quarterbacks before, you know, Malzahn, with two coordinators that he trusts enough to actually kind of become the CEO-style head coach, much the same way we may be seeing an evolution taking place at Georgia evolving to a little bit more of a modern version of the offense. If Malzahn finally takes that next step in his evolution and becomes the CEO-style coach, as much as it pains me to say this, I think Auburn could be more of a threat in the SEC moving forward than they're sometimes given credit for. They did not have a very good bowl game against Minnesota. That doesn't really matter to me all that much. I do think they've got two pretty good coordinators in place. $2.5 million for Steele seems like a lot of money. But I believe that Auburn's kind of a team worth watching here, and that's true for 2020, but it could be true even beyond that. They don't get as much hype as Florida does, but when it comes to rivals you have to worry about if you're Georgia, to me, I would still rank Auburn above Florida in that regard. You may disagree, but that's the purpose of the conversation, so you can weigh in if you'd like to. Here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, we'll make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And obviously, as we head towards the weekend, we kind of always like to sort of kick off the weekend by thinking about our friends at Kroger. I told you before about maybe staying indoors and kind of enjoying the cold weather from the inside, looking out through the window. Well, whatever you've got going on for the weekend, big parties, whatever else, you can always get stocked up for what you need at Kroger, including getting ready for the big game next Sunday. Go ahead and be getting stocked up for that. And speaking of the weekend, Kroger always allows us to look ahead to a busy weekend for UGA athletics as well. So let's do that as a part of our Kroger kickoff. I think a very important basketball game for the Georgia men on Saturday against Ole Miss. Bad team. Frankly, I'm at this point in time, I'm not quite so sure Georgia isn't a bad team. So Georgia needs to go out and win this game to just sort of maintain any relevancy for the remainder of the season. I expect them to do that. But Georgia needs to look good in front of the home crowd on Saturday. Jim Dawgs also on Saturday. They're in Fort Worth in one of these kind of combined meets against Denver, Alabama, and Oklahoma. So Jim Dawgs doing that. Lady Dawgs, by the way, congrats to the Lady Dawgs. Coach Joni Taylor, fresh off an upset win in Fayetteville last night, take on South Carolina. Another one of these really good ladies teams in the SEC. They'll do that on Sunday. And then you've got four former UGA golfers in the field for the Farmers Insurance Open. That's at Torrey Pines in La Jolla, California all weekend. By the way, great start yesterday by Bubba Watson. Bubba seems to always play well on the West Coast, won the Genesis a couple years ago. Bubba kind of got off to a nice start yesterday. You've also got track and field, swimming and diving, tennis, kind of in men's and women's, kind of involved all weekend too. So pretty busy weekend for UGA athletics and whatever your particular sport is. Hope you enjoy that as the Dawgs, in addition to some football recruiting, have some other sports kind of going on there as well. The one thing I have been very honest about in the past, and I'll be candid about it right now too, is I've got to do a better job of following some of these other sports. Admittedly, I just don't know a lot about track and field or swimming and diving, things like that. I've had people who, listen and watch the show from time to time who are good enough to kind of help kind of fill me in some of those details. But listen, different people sort of gravitate towards certain sports, and I like a lot of the more traditional sports, admittedly. I really like golf, and so we probably end up talking more about golf than we do tennis and things like that. But I'm going to try to do a better job giving a little bit more attention to some of the other UGA sports as well, especially with track and field doing as well as it has done. Matthew Bowling in the fold there. Of course, tennis continues to be strong, and swimming and diving always a lot of fun too. So we'll try to do our part to kind of keep up with all of that. One thing that is very easy to keep up with, the Gatorhater Updater. 1,182 days. That is how long it's been since the lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. You have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.